From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Damian Broderick joins us outside the gates of science. Fascinating program, but here's what's happening. Convicted on tax charges, Ed and Elaine Brown have now been convicted on all counts of plotting to kill federal agents during a nine-month standoff at their fort-like home in the rural New Hampshire area. The Browns in their 60s face a mandatory minimum 30-year prison sentence on one charge alone. The couple held hands, looked straight ahead as the verdict was read. The Browns were holed up in their Hilltop home in early 2007 to avoid arrest after being convicted of tax evasion. They amassed, they say, an arsenal of high-powered weapons and explosives, including traps in woods surrounding the home. In a moment, attorney Tom Cryer joins us, who battled the IRS on his own. But right now, Dave Von Kleist joins us, researcher and journalist, who was a friend of the Browns. Dave, tell me about the situation.
It's a very sad situation. It's such a travesty that, evidence for their defense was not allowed into the trial. And we're not talking about crazy evidence. We're talking about IRS codes, or Federal Code of Regulation, Uniform Code. I mean, all the laws were just thrown out here, and they're being convicted of a law, and I'm sure Tom Cryer will agree, that basically doesn't exist. So they're throwing the laws that are on the books out the window, and they're sort of like convicting people of laws that are not on the books. And it was a very emotional situation for me. I've known the, Ed Brown since 1997 when I met him at an American Legion Hall when we were I was traveling with Joyce Riley. And we were doing programs for the vets. You remember those good old days?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but the point was is they brought me into the courtroom as a witness for the defense for Elaine Brown, and they asked the standard questions: your name, your spell, your name, blah blah blah. They asked me about what I do. I told them I'm a journalist. I do radio. I do some politically incorrect music as well. I'm sure you're well aware of that.
But you do sing it well, though.
And anyway, so then they began asking me about. When I met them, et cetera, et cetera. And as I told them, I'd met them in 97, but I hadn't stayed in close contact with them through the years until this issue came up. And so I had gone up there early in 2007. Actually, it was in June, on an impromptu picnic slash concert slash just get together to draw attention to what their claim was.
Right, I remember that.
IRS. And it was a very impromptu thing. I'd interviewed Elaine Brown on a Tuesday morning, and the decision was made that Wednesday morning I would drive straight up to New Hampshire, and we did this concert on a Saturday afternoon. And we had about 30 or, I don't know, somewhere between 30 and 50 people show up. It wasn't a big turnout, but it was a very last-minute thing. But the idea caught on, and 2 weeks later, there was another concert that was planned, and it was much bigger, and there were, you know, probably a couple hundred people that were coming and going throughout the day. And one of the most unnerving things, I was streaming live video on the internet of this situation here, because a lot of people were very afraid that that there was going to be some kind of a siege, like another Waco or something.
Mm-hmm.
Federal
mm-hmm.
authorities were all over the place. And at one point, a helicopter showed up and began buzzing the festivities. Now, we had women and children there. We're having picnics, barbecues. We're playing music. You know, we're flying the flag, et cetera, saying, hey, look, a redress of grievance is not a bad thing. Let's have some justice here. And anyway, this helicopter buzzed us for hours, and I was videotaping, and I am a very emotional person. I mean, I welled up with tears thinking about what my country has become as I watched this helicopter intimidating everybody at this picnic. And so here I am at the trial, and they showed a still photograph of one of the bands that was playing there, Paul Tepeti and Poker Face. And then they began running the footage, and it just brought back the emotions that I felt back in 2007 when I was filming this. And
David, do you think the Browns did the right thing the wrong way?
I think there's an element of that. Ed, bless his heart. I mean, he's trying to stand up for the Constitution, and he's saying all the right things. I suppose some folks would say he's a bull in a china shop. He has a bull in a china shop approach to diplomacy, but and that's probably what got him, in the position that he's in. But I looked at Elaine, and Elaine looked awful. I mean, she's aged terribly, and it broke my heart. And when they started showing this footage of this helicopter, all the emotions that I had at the time of shooting it welled up, and I teared up, you know. And I my voice broke, and I said, "I'm sorry. I just see what's happening to my country." And immediately, the attorney wanted to change the subject, so they freeze framed the shot of the helicopter there on the big screen monitor there in the courtroom. And he changed the subject. He says, "Did you ever see any firearms? Did you ever see Ed Brown with a sidearm?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And he said, "Did you see any other firearms?" I said, "No." I said, "Were there any guns inside the house?" I said, "I didn't see any when I was in there." And they asked me if I went upstairs. "No." "Did I go downstairs?" "No." And "Did you see any booby traps?" I said, "No." "Did you see any people arming or patrolling, armed people patrolling the grounds?" I said, "No." And then he asked me the question. He says, "Do you think that the Browns had any legitimate reason to fear for their personal safety or for their lives?" And that question stunned me, because as he asked that question, I'm looking again at that helicopter on the big screen, and I just started to well up again. I said, "My God!" I said, "With something like this, you know, buzzing us, wouldn't you think that you'd have fear?" And then they said, "You're dismissed." And
well, it's a sad situation all around, David. It really is. And as you know, the Browns are in their 60s, so they will probably be well into their 90s if they're still alive when they finally get out of prison. Sad situation. David, thank you for being on the program. In a moment, attorney Tom Cryer will talk with us about this case and also just what it's like for you to pay taxes and what this all means. Thousands of protesters streamed down avenues of the capital in Iran, chanting death to the dictator and defying security forces who fired tear gas and charged them with batons, according to witnesses. Hussein Hajazi has been following the Iranian situation for us. Hussein, let me ask you two quick questions. One, this situation is not ending. What's going on there?
Well, the situation is not ending, and according to Mr. Mousavi, who has, in a meeting with some of his friends, have said that this situation will continue, and noting that the legitimacy of the government is questionable because people don't trust it. And today was the anniversary of the incident in Tehran University dormitory on July 1999, when the savage crackdown was done on the student at the Tehran University dorms. The masked besiegees and plainclothed members of the Revolutionary Guard stormed the dorms and threw the student out of the fourth and fifth floor windows.
Oh, my God.
They ransacked the building and destroyed everything inside. And we were witnessing the same situation, much worse, just less than 10 days ago when they did that.
And we keep following this Iranian situation because I just happen to feel, Hussein, that this is where the tinderbox in the Middle East is going to be. What do you hear with your sources about the Israeli-Iranian situation? How long is this going to take before there's some kind of armed military conflict there?
Well, we are getting very close to that unfortunate situation, Mr. Nouri, because right now we are hearing that with the comment that Mr. Biden made last week, and we talked about it earlier.
Yes, giving them the green light, basically.
Yes, yes. And this is something, and I was talking to a friend of mine who is going back and forth to Israel, Iranian Jewish gentleman who is very knowledgeable. He was saying that, you know, we don't have any, the people of the Israel don't have any problem with the Iranian, and they are very good friends, and they can cooperate and be a very good allies, while Mr. Ahmadinejad has messed up so much that any possibility on that direction has been ruined.
Let me ask you this. You're Iranian. You live in the United States now. You're pro-Western. Would you welcome an Israeli attack on Iran at this point?
I don't welcome anybody's attack to Iran at this point.
Okay, Hussein. Thank you. We'll continue to monitor that situation as well. In Nashville, Tennessee, former NFL star Steve McNair was shot dead, they say now, in his sleep last week by a 20-year-old girlfriend, distraught about mounting financial problems and her belief that he was seeing someone else. But investigators may never know why she shot McNair four times as he dozed on a sofa early Saturday before turning the gun on herself. Interviews with friends reveal that she was making payments on two cars, her rent was doubling, and she suspected the married McNair was having a second affair with another woman. The Reverend Jesse Jackson lambasted the four alleged graveyard robbers charged with digging up graves and dismembering bodies buried at a suburban Chicago cemetery in a money-making scheme. The four cemetery workers are accused of taking cash payments from unsuspecting clients for plots of land, falsifying deeds, excavating existing graves, and dumping the bones and remains in the back of the cemetery. Well, Willy Wonka would not like this one. A 22-year-old factory worker has died after he fell into a vat of boiling chocolate at a manufacturing plant in New Jersey. The Camden County Prosecutor's Office identified the victim as Vincent Smith II. He was a temporary worker at the cocoa services plant. Smith had been in the melting pot for 10 minutes by the time rescue crews arrived. Residents of a rural Australian town hoping to protect the earth have voted to ban the sale of bottled water, the first community in the country and possibly the world to take such a drastic step in the growing backlash against the industry. Residents cheered after their near unanimous approval of the measure at a town meeting. It was the second blow to Australia's beverage industry in a day. Hours earlier, the New South Wales state premier banned all state departments and agencies from buying bottled water, calling it a waste of money and natural resources. A drug discovered in the soil of a South Pacific island may help to fight the aging process. While scientists are looking into it, they say that old mice treated with rapamycin is intended and grown their life expectancy up to 38%. The findings published in the journal Nature raised the prospect of being able to slow down the aging process to older people. However, a UK expert has warned against using the drug to try to extend lifespan as it can suppress immunity. Who knows? They say women spend almost a year of their lives deciding what to wear, according to a new study. Choosing outfits for work, nights out, dinner parties, holidays, and other activities means the average female, according to surveys, will spend 287 days rifling through their wardrobe. Up next, attorney Tom Cryer will talk about the IRS and the case of Ed and Elaine Brown in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Tom Cryer has practiced virtually every aspect of criminal and civil law for years. Tom refused to file tax returns or pay income tax unless the government could show lawful authority to do either one. In 2006, he was indicted by the federal government, went to court. He was acquitted by 12 jurors in Shreveport, Louisiana. You might remember, we had Tom on the air that moment. They found that there is no law that makes the average American citizen liable for the income tax. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Tom, welcome back.
Well, good to be back, George.
Good to have. Now, if there is no law for the income tax, what happened to Ed and Elaine Brown? How did they get convicted?
What happened to Elaine and Ed Brown is that the court goes in on these trials with the presumption, because everybody has this belief that there is a law. I had the belief. When I was first told that, I told the guy he was nuts. There had to be a law. They couldn't do what they're doing. 2 weeks later, I'm sitting there looking stunned. And having to tell a fellow that I was wrong and he was right, which is not something I'm accustomed to doing. And so the average guy on the street is just like I was, like you are, or everybody else is. You know, what we have is the rule of law. And this jury goes in there, and the only way that the guy can be innocent is if they're wrong and that they've been duped and they've been a patsy for all their lives. And jurors are going to resist believing that.
I've filed taxes for 42 years now, Tom. I don't like paying taxes at all, but I file the taxes and I pay the taxes, and it goes on and on and on, and I've always wanted a different kind of system, a use tax, a sales tax, or something like that. I would say that, you know, most Americans probably don't want to pay taxes, but they do for several reasons. One, they feel patriotic. Two, they're afraid of what could happen to people like Ed and Elaine Brown. What do people do about all this, Tom?
Well, the problem here is that if there were a tax there to be paid, I would have paid it. And I pay taxes every day. I don't mind paying taxes. It's called pulling your weight. But I do mind being stolen from, and I do mind being extorted from. And once I got into researching it, I found out that the reason why the law is the way it's drawn is that they couldn't tax our wages or our personal earnings, and so they just pretend to tax everything so that nobody questions it, and they pay the tax. It's kind of like having a mass hypnosis session going here. And once the hypnosis is broken, you can't go back. And so the main thing that we need to do is for the public to wake up and see the truth. And then I think nature will take its course. That's what we're trying to do, is to alert the public to look at the law. Don't pay attention to what somebody's telling you, whether I tell you what the IRS tells you. Look at the law. Let the law speak for itself. It's in English. It's not difficult to understand. It's very craftily and artfully drawn to mislead. But when you stop and you read it and say, well, read it and see what it really says and what it really doesn't say, it's very clear. Bing. It's like whenever you've seen these pictures that have a rabbit or a squirrel or a hammer buried somewhere in the picture. And the trick is to find all those objects.
Yeah, yeah. And you do that in the doctor's offices for years. Remember that?
Right. But once you see that rabbit and you found him among the tree leaves, every time you look at that picture, the rabbit jumps out. Well, we're looking at all of these trees and these leaves and this grass. We're not seeing the rabbits. We're not seeing a squirrel. You cannot unsee it anymore.
Tom, there are some organizations out there that are trying to do with the income tax. With the fair tax folks and others, is anybody going to be successful doing this?
I'm hoping and I believe that Truth Attack, the organization I founded a couple of years ago, is going to be successful in educating the public on the fact that the federal government has been deceiving them, that the federal government has been lying to them. And that once that happens, once the cat gets out of the bag, so to speak, it's going to bring a halt. At some point, once it hits critical mass and enough people come to see the truth, then the passive resistance will automatically take over. It won't happen until the numbers are right. It'll happen automatically because most of us, and what we tell people, I tell people every day, we don't advocate that you start refusing to pay taxes. I mean, not everybody can get up there and explain these things to a jury.
Right, that's true.
Not everybody is carrying credentials when they walk in there. And the jury says, well, what do you know? I mean, I had an unfair advantage in that my credentials, my legal and scholastic credentials outweighed those of the judge and the prosecutor put together.
Tom, you know, we'll get behind you. You know, we're seeking the truth. That's our mission on this program. And if it indeed ends up being that the income tax is wrong, that there is no income tax, I'll jump on this bandwagon very quickly.
Well, George, I'll tell you what you do to find out. And like I said, don't take my word for it, because that's the problem. That's what we've been doing, is taking the government's word for it for all these years. And it isn't so. But don't take my word for it. If you were to go to a website, and for free, I wrote a brief during the course of my case that spells all of this out in real plain English. As a matter of fact, I had one lady sent me an email and thanked me for writing and said it was wonderful. She said my eighth grade daughter read it and understood it. And I wrote back and I said the reason that your eighth grade daughter read it and understood it was I wrote it so that a federal judge could understand it.
And, all right, and the website's truthattack.org.
Right.
You've also got another one, don't you?
If you went onto that website, George, and clicked on resources, you'd find that it's called the memorandum.
Okay.
And it's free. Doesn't cost a penny. I have never copyrighted. I have never registered anything I've ever written on this subject and don't intend to. The truth ought to be just getting the truth to people.
Tom, you're sponsoring through Truth Attack, the Tea Party Squared. We'll talk about that when we come back. And we'll take your phone calls as well with Tom Cryer. Maybe you want to share your income tax stories with us. If you want to, we'll be back. Next hour, Damian Broderick joins us outside the gates of science. Why it's time for the paranormal to come in from the cold. Looking forward to that. We'll be back in a moment. Phone calls and more questions with Tom Cryer on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, tell me a little bit about Truth Attack and its sponsoring of the Tea Party Squared.
Well, Truth Attack is an organization of freedom movement organizations and about 8,000, now approaching 10,000 patriots across the country. We're in all 50 states. We're getting organized. What basically we're doing is we're focusing, like a magnifying glass focuses sunlight, on one issue at a time. We like to say this, we're going to put the government back in its box, one tentacle at a time. And we're starting at the roots of the tree of tyranny, the enabling of fraud of the income tax, that really the only people who are liable according to law are withholding agents for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. And yet, you know, we've been hypnotized into turning over that money. And I'll tell you how bad that is, George. A while back, an incident that happened right here in Shreveport, an Internal Revenue Service agent serving a summons, and a woman he served it on says, look, I know that you guys are stealing. I know you're thieves. I've read the code. I know that I'm not liable for the income tax, and you know it too. And he says, no, I don't. He said, but you've got the advantage of me if you've read the code. And she said, you mean you've never read the code? And he says, well, no, ma'am, I don't think I've ever seen the code. And she said, well, how long have you been working for the Internal Revenue Service? He said, 22 years.
22 years. Let's take some calls.
He's responsible for enforcing the law, and he's never even seen it. He's taken it on faith. You know, but right now what we're trying to do with Tea Party Squared, George, is we're trying to mobilize and direct in a positive and effective way the energy that we're seeing, and you're seeing it. I mean, it's all over the country. All these tea parties that are popping up all over the place. I have, and I'm dating myself right here, but I have never seen such a sense of ill ease, of tension, of angst, of this feeling of dread in the country since the Cuban Missile Crisis.
I agree. I agree with you, Tom.
People, the only problem is they don't know why. And so what we're going to be doing is we're going to hit Florida. We're going to do it a state at a time, just like you eat an elephant, one bite at a time. And we're going to start with Florida. And we're going to circle Florida with a 1,000-plus-mile motor march, a two-week motor march. We're going to go clear around the state. We're going to end up with a huge, everybody's going to end up, you know, we're going to build this following as we go along, at tea party after tea party after tea party. We're going to conduct seminars on how to be an effective citizen, not just how to complain. You know, can I tell you a story?
Yep, and then we'll take calls.
You know, when I was a kid, I grew up on a farm, and every 3, 4, 5, 6 months, we would take a couple of hogs to a slaughterhouse a few miles down the road. Now, the way you move a hog is you can't corral him, you know, but you have to put him on that trailer. You get him by the hind legs, and you walk him like a wheelbarrow, and for a larger, wouldn't you get one guy on each leg? Now, I don't know if you've been around a hog when he's been grabbed.
No.
But he screams to high heaven. I mean, the noise is almost painful. He screams so loud. But you know what? When you push him forward, he walks because he's not going to fall on his face, and he hits on that trailer. Now, the tea parties I'm seeing around are wonderful. It's showing that people are starting to care. They're worried about things. They know it's not right. You know, they know their money is becoming worthless, this phony money coming out of the Federal Reserve. They know that their retirement funds are melting right in front of their eyes. They know their jobs are going south. They know their homes are being repossessed. They know that this is something bad happening here, but they don't understand why. They don't know what to do about it. And just like those hogs, they're making noise. But noise didn't save those pigs. When they got on that trailer, they were pork chops. We have to start kicking. We have to say we're not getting on that trailer. And we have to start bucking. You know, the people have, how many countries you know can just replace one house of their legislative body every 24 months? The whole thing, wipe them out. How many countries do you see where they have the veto power over any law? Because when they climb in that jury box, they're the judge of the law as well as the facts. And once they learn that, because the judge isn't required to tell them that, but once they learn that and start exercising their veto power, they can say, I don't care if the president did sign it, what you shouldn't have ever passed it. I don't care if the Supreme Court did say you could do it. I said, put it back, and I'm the boss. I govern you. You're my government. You're my creature. I created you.
And right now it's the other way around.
I can take you out. And so we're going to be circling Florida, and we're going to be teaching people this. We're going to be letting them know, do more than squeal. Start kicking, guys. We're not getting on the trailer. And that's the only way this is going to stop. And so that's basically what Florida's did. You know, Tea Party Squared is, and that's why we call it Squared, because we're not just going to squeal, we're going to kick. We're not going to let you walk us up on that trailer. And that's right now, I mean, it's falling into place. We're talking, it's just going to be a huge event. We're going to have some fantastic speakers.
I know you've got Ron Paul down, right?
Dave Von Kleist, who was on there, is going to be right along for the tour, who was on here earlier. What a super American. What a terrific patriot.
He's gone through a lot. Let's take some calls here, Tom. Let's go to you, Angela, in Culver City, California. Hi there.
Hi, George. Thank you so much for having Tom Cryer on.
Sure.
This subject needs to be aired a lot more than it has been in the public, and I thank you for that. Mr. Cryer, I got a copy of a notice of levy from my employer, and my question to you is, on the levy itself, on the notice, it starts with Part B. Where's Part A?
Part A is mysteriously left off of notices of levy. And Part A is a part that shows that levies can only be issued on people who are liable for the tax and then fail or refuse to pay. That it just conveniently omitted. But, you know, that liability issue runs throughout the code. If you look at the code, it says of 6001, says every person liable for a tax must keep records, you know, render statements, make such returns, and comply with such rules and regulations as the secretary may from time to time prescribe. 6011 on filing returns. Again, you know, any person made liable or when required by regulations. And whenever the only people who are required by regulations, according to 6001, is people who are liable. And you jump up to 6331, where you are now. Any person, you know, or 6331, where you are now with this levy, only people liable are subject to levy. 6321, only people who are liable are subject to a lien being placed on their property. And yet they completely ignore the fact that there is no law that says that we're liable in the first place.
Next up, let's go to Maricopa, Arizona. Sky, it's your turn. Hi, Sky.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Great topic today, and I really appreciate your program. Tom, I had 5 years ago, I got leaned on my taxes on my Social Security. When I went to the Social Security office and asked them what's going on, because I'm short some money, did you forget to pay me? They said, no, Uncle Sam's taking the money. And I said, what and why? And they gave me a list of all the jobs I ever had. I called the IRS. They asked me what my name was, my Social Security number, blah, 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 and when I was born and all that stuff. And when they got through, they said, oh, that Social Security number is not yours. And I asked them, well, what name do you have on it? And they said, well, we can't tell you that from the what's that word I'm looking for? I'm kind of nervous here.
Privacy
Act. Anyway,
uh-huh.
Yeah, Privacy Act. And meanwhile, they keep taking the money, but they've never told me how much that person owes or how much longer they're going to keep taking it.
How many years did you work under that number?
I've had it all my life. I'll be 69 years old this month.
And they didn't have any complaint about that number not being your right number until it was time to pay you something.
Right.
Yeah, isn't that convenient?
Right. And so, and all the other offices I've called and complained about it, they said, we can't do anything. So here I am. I continue to pay for it. I live on under $800 a month. I pay my own medical insurance,
Oh, bless your heart.
I don't have a computer.
You need to do something about this. And the best way to do it is to move up. You've got a lot of ducks down there at the bottom end of every scale. I don't care whether you're dealing with Sears or you're dealing with Social Security Administration. The people up front are all ducks. They don't really do anything. They don't have any way of making decisions. And when they don't know something, their answer is no. Every bureaucrat, I don't care what his job is or what kind of title he has the same job description. Get you off of my phone, get you out of my office, and get your paper off my desk. That's what their whole purpose in life is. It doesn't matter how they do it. They think that's why we hired them, was just to get you off of their phone, you out of their office, or your paper off of their desk. That's their function, their role in life. You have to get above these ducks. The ducks are just swimming around, making a lot of racket and crapping in the same water that they eat out of. You've got to get up until you find an eagle. And sometimes that takes getting with your congressman or getting with your senator. Sometimes that means getting a lawyer who is skilled at administrative law. I'm not. I'm not an administrative law practitioner. But, I would urge you to not just sit back and think that they're going to eventually relent and come back and try to solve your problem for you, because they really don't care.
Let's go to Olathe, Kansas now, and Kathy is on the wild card line. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, George. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How's everybody? I have a question. I've been battling the IRS since 1997, and we sent in some refunds, some taxes that had refunds to pay for some taxes of the year that we were going to owe. And the state says they received the taxes on January 31st, 1997, for the years of 96 and 95, 95 and 96, and 94. There were 3 years we filed. And you have 3 years, by their rules, to send it in, right?
Right.
Okay.
To amend.
Yes. Well, we knew that. I mean, we were told that. The IRS says they didn't receive them until July of 97. Exactly. Almost April, May, June, 3 months after.
Do you have any proof of mailing?
They have looked it up. And they said they destroyed the envelope.
But do you have any proof of mailing? Did you send those certified or any way?
No. We never, wouldn't even have dawned on us, you know. I've been battling them.
You just trusted them to keep up with that, right?
I did.
Well, I'll tell you, we should be able to trust our servants. We should be able to trust our public servants to be honest and to be straightforward. Oftentimes, they get in these returns, but they don't process them. And if they are dilatory in processing your return, then they're just going to put it back on you and say, well, you filed it late. We didn't get it back. No explanation. Quack, quack.
Truth Attack has come up with its own stimulus plan. What's that, Tom?
Well, the stimulus plan is so simple that it scares the dickens out of people, and that is just simply suspend collection and withholding of the income tax, the personal income tax. You know, that it only represents a small portion of the money that the federal government receives, and they're already this year 34% off. So it would only be a small portion of a small portion of their revenues. And yet it would instantly cause the economy to just soar, to actually just
explode. Oh, yeah, I think so. I think people would use that savings, so to speak, and they'd spend it.
Well, they need it. You know, their dollar has been getting diluted and diluted. They keep putting water in the pot. And it's going to get to the point to where that dollar won't sustain life. That soup just will not, support human life anymore. Then people are wondering, why am I making more than I ever had? I can't make ends meet. It's because the dollar they're getting is worth about 5 cents. When I went to work, George, for the first time on an hourly basis, my first job was $6 a day, can to can, in a rice field. But my first hourly job was at Sears. I went to work for minimum wage at $1.60, but I was getting real dollars, the kind that makes money when you drop it on a table.
Absolutely.
Now, today, you would have to make $32 an hour to do as well as I did as a teenager that knew absolutely nothing working at Sears selling underwear and socks. You'd have to make $32 an hour today to have the same buying power that I had back then. And, you know, we're wondering why, you know, but the stimulation would be instant, it would be immediate. Right now, they're spending millions of dollars assembling a special team in the Justice Department to deal with bailout fraud. And you can't have bailout fraud if the money only goes to the guy after he's earned it. After all, it's his money in the first place.
Well, we find out, Tom, every time government gets involved, prohibition did not work. Stimulus plan does not work. These things just don't work.
No. And the more the government gets involved, the more it messes things up. I don't want to get off the subject, but I mean, this is so illustrative of what we're talking about here. The automobile industry, they've been told for years and years how to make automobiles. I like V8s. I like fins on the back. I'm the consumer. Shouldn't I get my fins? I'm the one with the gold. The golden rule says that the guy with the gold makes the rules, right?
That's the old rule, yes.
Yeah,
true.
And so the consumer, supply and demand are supposed to be the only laws that tell the manufacturers what to manufacture. And yet the government comes in and says, make these. Russia, sitting there with warehouses full of work boots because they said the people need work boots, so we're making work boots. But the people wanted sneakers, and they're out there, you know, they can't give the work boots away. The sneakers are getting paid for $10 on the buck on the street in the black market. Well, it's because you tampered with the laws of supply and demand. You tampered with free enterprise. And whenever every time that they get in here, they start turning knobs and throwing switches, you know that a system that works so perfectly without any government supervision, without anything other than supply and demand and the consumer and the manufacturer arranging things on equal push and pull, it always works. That's how we got built. That's why this country became so prosperous, so powerful, so fast. Look at it. It was the freer we were, the better we did. The less government we had, the better off everybody
Good
was.
Good point. Let's go to Asheville, North Carolina. Last call. Michael, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Hi. Morning, George. Morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Back in 1985, I won a contest for a distributor company, and I get a thing at the end of the year from the government from Memphis, and I thought it was a check. It was actually a W-2 or a withholding for the trip, right? So I paid off about 50% of it off, and I borrowed the rest from my dad, and I paid off within 6 months. And to this day, as of last year, every year since 1985, I get a thing from Memphis, from the IRS, payment vouchers saying that I owe them money.
Jeez. How much do they say you own them now?
It's up to about $15,000 or $16,000, but I have proof of myself paying it off back in early 1986.
Mm-hmm.
So I get vouchers from the government every year right at tax time.
And that's your experience. What's sad is that your experience is not unique. They have come up with this automated system. When they were under a hiring freeze in 2000, in 2001, they asked the government, they asked Congress for half of $1 billion so that they could go to an 8-digit date system because of the change of the century. And so Congress gave them their $500 million. And they used it to build a robot. Now, in 2001, there were 400,000 third-party seizures where they take money out of your bank account or they take money out of your paycheck. Now, that's a lot of lives wrecked,
right? That is
right?
A lot. Hey, Tom, your website, truthattack.org. Good luck with your work and good luck with the Truth Attack. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with our very special guest, Damian Broderick, as we talk about Outside the Gates of Science.